Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to today's Healthy Community. Today's Healthy Community focuses on topics from state, local, and national levels. It aims to improve health literacy by offering resources and information to strengthen the health of individuals, families, and the communities in which we live. Today we have two wonderful guests. Actually, there's some good stuff happening in New Mexico. Our guests today are Dr. Molly Faulkner and Dr. Bob Phillips. They're going to be talking about some issues around the topic of mental health and substance use and how we can directly affect our communities by focusing on ways to help kids get involved in those careers. Dr. Faulkner is an assistant professor and nurse practitioner and clinical social worker in the Division of Community Behavioral Health at the University of New Mexico's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health Sciences. She serves as a clinical director of the State Behavioral Health Workforce Initiative, and she's been involved in this profession for 36 years. She received her BSN at the University of Oklahoma, MSW at New Mexico Highlands University, and her MSN and PhD at the University of New Mexico. So welcome. Thank you, Dr. Bob. You have quite a history as well. You are a terrestrial from Roswell and the coordinator of Human Services and Addiction Studies at Eastern New Mexico University in Roswell. You also have decades of experience and have served as a clinician, an educator, a trainer, and a consultant in the fields of addiction treatment and the integration of behavioral health into primary care. So I won't continue on. You both have very lengthy CVs. I'll just say you're well qualified to talk about this. And we have some events coming up. I think maybe now that we've had some introductions, perhaps we could talk about behavioral health careers and just even the shortage of behavioral health careers professionals.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure to be on your program today, Rebecca. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. I work here at the University of New Mexico, as Rebecca stated, and I am the clinical director of the State Behavioral Health Workforce Initiative. That is a mouthful.
Yes.
But what we know in this state is that we really have a dearth or a lack of behavioral health providers for the many people in this state who need substance abuse treatment and mental health treatment. So our state has longstanding health disparities compared to national data. We know that we have, for the past 15 years, we have a death rate from alcohol-related chronic disease that has been the first or second in the nation. And we have 1.5 to 2 times the national rate. We all also know, we've heard on the news about our high drug overdose mortality rates as well. And we are trying to address the opioid use disorder crisis that we have in the state. But
huge.
Only 44% of New Mexico adults really have ability to get any treatment, and most people don't, and for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons we're talking with you today is that we're having a workforce forum for youth in the state because we'd like to help them learn more about behavioral health careers. And on April 14th, Saturday, April 14th from 1 to 5, we'll be holding a workforce forum live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the Domenici North Building. However, we are also live streaming it to 4 areas across the state. We're live streaming
that.
It to partners. Yeah. We're live streaming it to there at Western New Mexico University, there in Silver City.
Yep, right around
New
the
Mexico
corner.
State University.
Yep.
In Las Cruces, New Mexico Highlands University, as well as Eastern New Mexico in Roswell.
So this really makes it accessible to all sorts of folks who may be interested in learning more about mental health and therapeutic types of professions.
Absolutely. Our behavioral health workforce has a lot of different providers. We have substance abuse treatment providers who are licensed alcohol and drug abuse counselors. We have licensed substance abuse associates, social workers, psychologists, counselors, as well as psychiatrists and nurse practitioners.
Mm-hmm. And it does really take a team of people to approach this whole topic of mental health. And, you know, when we consider all of the important factors in overall wellness, I would say that mental health is at the top of the list when we go back and we think about how challenging life can be, just managing a family and keeping the job and sorting things out and having a clear head to do that and feeling like you can participate and be the best you can be. And I think mental health really is at the top of that whole pyramid.
I say you can't really have good health until you have mental health.
That's very true. That's very true. So, Dr. Bob, you have done a lot of work in regards to addiction. And as Dr. Faulkner stated, we do have a very large challenge in regards to substance abuse and opioid abuse. Can you talk to us about some of the statistics, perhaps, and speak to this problem and what you might suggest or hope to see in the future in regards to that topic?
Sure. I'll give you one just immediate sort of thing to put this in perspective. One of the ways that people count the numbers of people with problems is you look for just good indicators of this. And the most striking indicator of our opiate crisis is the overdose death rate. And if you'd like, I can talk a little bit about why overdose seems to be more common these days in addition just to the greater prevalence of drug use.
I would,
Just to put perspective, around the United States, for every 100,000 persons, there are about 16 overdose deaths. So 16 per 100,000 is the comparison that you want to know. Now, in New Mexico, our number is, for the entire state, our number is about almost, it's rounded up. In New Mexico, the number is 25 per 100,000.
Wow.
So we're significantly higher than the national statistics. And many, many of our counties have two or three times that number. Rio Arriba County has a catastrophic rate of 86 per 100,000. So around the country, it's about 16 per 100,000. In Rio Arriba County, it's about 86 per 100,000. And so we've always been very near the top of this. We've been fairly stable, and actually this year to the last year, we've seen a slight decline. Some initiatives are beginning to make their way into the public consciousness, better prescription monitoring. The other thing that's going to be life-saving and has been for thousands of people in New Mexico is the ability of people to get and use something called naloxone, which is a spray that goes into the nostril of the person who's passed out, and it reverses the effects of the heroin or the fentanyl or whatever they've overdosed on, at least temporarily, give them time to get to a hospital or get the EMS crew out there and those kind of things. So families are learning to do that. Persons with these problems themselves are learning to do that. So we're really trying to make a dent in that. And so there's a lot of effort around the state to try to do it, just like there is lots of other places around the country. It really is an epidemic of things. In the 1970s, when I first started in this, we also had a heroin crisis, but the difference was it was almost all about heroin itself. These days, we have three things that are going on. One is heroin has continued to be a steady problem. The second is that much heroin is now mixed with another opiate called fentanyl that's illegally imported from Asia and China and other places. And it is far, far more deadly than heroin. And then the other thing that's fueled this is about half of the overdose death rates are involved with persons who are taking prescription opiates, Oxycontin, codeine preparations, and other kinds of things. So the mix of the opiate drugs that people have available now are much more deadly and much more prevalent than they would have been back in the 70s, let's say.
And it sounds like these cocktails, they're obviously, even if they're prescribed in regards to the oxycodones, when they're misused and they're not monitored, sometimes problems occur. I think that this event you're having is just a wonderful opportunity to share the benefits of being engaged in a behavioral health career.
Well, I've been involved in the behavioral health workforce pipeline for now a number of years here at Eastern New Mexico University in Roswell. What we have at the community college is a two-year program that is an entry-level program that allows people to go into human services. They get an associate's in human services. And then we have a certificate in addiction studies that qualifies them for the initial licensures in substance abuse counseling. most of my students, because of the way that funding is and the way that organizations have now evolved, know they're going to need other training. So we have pipelines to our sister campus in Portales for say, a bachelor's in social work, or at Highlands University, which has a presence on our campus for a master's in social work. So what we've done over the last number of years is to kind of build a pipeline where we can, what I call, grow our own. We find it much easier to grow our own providers from the community than just to recruit providers to come to Roswell, unless they're transported here by spacecraft from other places. So we've had much more luck populating the employment situation here by growing our own graduates of these programs. And it's a challenge everywhere in the state. We simply don't have enough training programs. We don't have enough. And we have a fair number of providers, but they're not well distributed. Most of the providers are in the Bernalillo County, Santa Fe, and Albuquerque area. But we have a vast state and lots of rural and frontier communities that just don't have these providers, and it's very difficult to get them to come. Molly's well aware that UNM has really been a champion with developing alternatives to having local providers by using telemedicine and things like Project Echo, which bring consultants from UNM and the medical schools and other providers by television and satellite out to the various communities, and that certainly has helped.
That's a topic I really want to get further into detail with you about, Dr. Bob.
Sure.
We're here with Dr. Faulkner and Dr. Phillips about behavioral health. Please stand by, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back, listeners. This is Rebecca Van Ness with today's Healthy Community. Today we have guests Dr. Molly Faulkner and Dr. Bob Phillips, and we're talking about an opportunity for young people and young adults to come find out more about behavioral health careers. But I know, Dr. Bob, when you mentioned telemedicine and the ability to reach out to patients, the technology, and I think this is something that our young adults, and they've grown up with this and they understand it, and it's something that they feel comfortable with. Talk to me a little bit about how you think telemedicine and other types of technologies could help us reach out to folks in rural communities who may not have the access that you might have in Albuquerque.
Well, it does exactly that, and the technology has certainly gotten better and more reliable. The signals and the video are really quite good. One can even do hook up electronic stethoscopes, you know, and other kinds of things, and microscopic cameras to do analysis of skin lesions or skin cancers. And I think the technology for telemedicine, telepsychiatry, telehealth, I'm not sure exactly what terms are going to settle on eventually, but there's a lot of that work going on. And much of this was started right there at UNM. Project Echo is now a program that has gone worldwide. There, I don't know how many universities have a sister Project Echo, but the idea of it is that you take local consultants who are at the top of their field in these various subjects, whether it's psychiatry or dermatology or endocrinology or family practice medicine, and make those persons available for local providers so they can get on the websites with them and on the broadcast with them. They can present cases. They can get consultations. People can provide them. Mom can tell you what she does. She actually consults with one of my sister organizations here and these clients or patients, and actually can do prescriptions and medication monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
So has filled a need and closed some of the gap. There still is a vast need, I think, for some sort of regional hub types of providers. There may be lots of different models you could think of that would get providers more close to where people are. But this has certainly helped. There's no doubt about it, and I think will continue to be an increasing presence. I suspect that in many ways, even people that have providers right down the street may find it convenient at some point to just log on to a computer screen and have a virtual consultation.
Sure.
And those kind of things. So I think this is going to spread into areas even where there are actual providers, you know, down the street, because, you know, people do like the convenience of online shopping, and I don't think this will be any, I don't think this behavior will be much different.
Yeah.
What do you think, Molly?
Actually, I do a couple of different things over teleconferencing and I do a lot of different things with respect to that. I do consultation clinics for developmentally delayed mentally ill clients across the state, where we consult with the providers about the care of these individuals. I also do telepsychiatry, where I see adolescents and children with psychiatric issues. There is some research that shows that adolescents are even more prone to talking and disclosing what's their innermost feelings if they are on a teleconferencing tool as opposed to being in person. They feel it's a bit removed. They like that. And I also do tele supervision across the state with LMSWs too, who are seeking independent licensure. And there's a lot of things you can do in behavioral health and in the careers that are out there. I'm fortunate in that I've had a long career like Bob's. But for youth in the that are listening, or their parents that are listening, I really encourage you to talk to your children about finding a very meaningful career where you can help others and you can be helped by helping others. And I would say a career in behavioral health of any kind would really meet that criteria. You, like Bob was saying, you can get an associate's degree and work work in areas of mental health and addictions. And you can determine whether you want to continue your education and move on into nursing or counseling or social work or psychology. There's, we even have peer support workers in the state.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about that before.
I have heard a little bit about it. I'd like to know more.
We're the leaders in the country on peer support, meaning that this state does more in peer support than others do. And as a certified peer support worker, you're a person with lived experience. So if you say you had a lived experience with someone who had an issue with mental health or addictions, you could become, and you had been, you were 18 years of age and had graduated from high school and you've been 2 years sober or 2 years in recovery with your mental illness, you could too could become a certified peer worker and work in the mental health field, assisting and helping others to overcome their addictions and mental health concerns. We're also having family peer support workers that are coming up within the ranks as well to help people who've had family members who've had family members with addictions and mental health issues. The same concept, lived experience really is an ideal way to help others.
And I think there's a sense of comfort, you know, in being able to relate to somebody who's walked down that path and come out of it healthy and more functional. I know that the National Association for Mental Illness, NAMI, we've got some projects going on here, like in regards to the peer support, but also for families who are trying to support loved ones who are struggling with issues. It was interesting when I was looking at the National Council for Community and Behavioral Health, having being a mental health first aid trainer, I was reminded that more than 25% of people in the workforce report some level of depression or anxiety in a given year. That's one in four people. And so it really underscores the need for behavioral health professionals and folks that can support folks, other folks, when they need it the most.
I'll just add also that in very fundamental ways, the addiction field really pioneered this notion. For decades, the only people that were helping people with alcoholism and other addictions were recovering alcoholics and addicts. And long before there were the consciousness to develop, you know, programs and services that we have now, there were people that were that had a lived experience of addiction and recovery and carried that message out as a part of their own recovery to other people. And even to this day, about half the people that come into our addiction studies programs, not just mine, but the others around the state, are persons with that lived experience of addiction and recovery, and they want to give back, and they make just some of the best people you can imagine to do this kind of work. And now that concept has been expanded to the mental health community, and the idea of recovery is now very well enshrined in mental health in general, not just addictions. And so when the, for example, when the students come to the forum on the 14th of April, I'm sure that we'll hear a lot about one of those pathways is if you are a person yourself, you've got a family member who lived this experience, you may have a particular desire to serve in this way and know about these kind of things. I think we really do want to make a special invitation to people who have had this lived experience within themselves or in their families, because it's often the chance they get to really make a meaningful contribution for what they've received or what they hope others receive.
Absolutely, Bob. Thank you. I love that.
Yeah, it's really great.
Absolutely.
So we have a couple minutes left. We're going to have to wrap up here in about 5 minutes. And I'd like to just give some information. You provided me with some information on this event on April 14th. Is that a Saturday?
Yes, that's Saturday, April 14th from 1 to 5 p.m. And even though the live event will be here in Albuquerque at UNM Domenici Center, Education Center North on the third floor here at the University of New Mexico, we are live streaming it to partner satellite sites across New Mexico so that students, high school and undergraduate college students can attend. We're going to be having a program that we developed after talking with a bunch of youth in the community. They said they wanted to know about the teenage and young adult brain. We're going to have a guy who's an expert in this and a great speaker to youth. We're going to have a panel discussion with behavioral health and substance use counselors so the kids can talk to these individuals who are doing the work, as well as students who are in these programs, as well as peer support workers, so they can talk to them and ask them specific questions.
We're also
going to have exhibitors from local behavioral health and substance abuse agencies. Hmm. You'll have exhibitors in Silver City of folks that are near you, so that this is where the students might live. And then we're going to have free food, and always good for
free
food.
That's always a winner.
Yeah. And then there's going to be some door prizes, so people will be able to win free prizes. This is a free event. We're giving information to Rebecca to post this on the radio station site. But you can also, this is funded by SAMHSA through NADAC, the Addictions Professionals Organization.
Yes.
And you can register online at NADAC, NAADAC.org, New Mexico Workforce Forum. If you want more information, we're also giving Rebecca information to post on the website for each site. They're in Silver City, Las Cruces, Roswell, Las Vegas, and Albuquerque, so that people can call and or email us, because we're here ready to help you come and enjoy this forum.
Yeah, I see you did provide me a list of phone numbers. We're going to have that available. Today's Healthy Community, you can find us on Facebook. And as we move forward in a week or two, you'll be able to actually listen to the podcasts. And we have a list of phone numbers here in Silver City. We've got James Helgert. A lot of folks know him, a really good guy. And if you're here in the Silver City area and you're interested in knowing more about the event, please don't hesitate to call him at 575-956-5051. Holly Hudgens, who's another local resident, does a lot for the community. She is, and Gina Trujillo. They're at based out of Las Cruces at New Mexico State University. They can be contacted at 575-646-2087. And then if you have any other questions, of course, about the event, like Dr. Faulkner said, you can visit the website for NADAC at www.naadac.org, New Mexico Workforce. It looks like it took a whole lot of people to put this event on. I mean, I see the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, New Mexico, the Southern AHEC, Western New Mexico, Forward New Mexico. Here locally, they do great work. University of New Mexico. My hat is off to you. I mean, I'm just really excited at the opportunity to share the warm feelings that come from having a profession like this in behavioral health. And if you could offer any kind of call to action or any inspirational words you might leave with them over the next couple of minutes about why they might attend this event and what they might gain from it, go ahead, and you have an open mic.
From my perspective, the world needs you. The world needs you and wants you to be in this workforce helping others. And surprisingly enough, it will give back as much as you give. It's a way to serve. It's a way to have a career with impact and a meaningful career where you can help others. We hope to see you there.
Well, thank you. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Bob.
Oh, I was what Molly said is just absolutely correct. I just know from my own personal experience, I was 19 years old when I first got into this, and I'm way beyond that now. So it's been a sustaining career with impact that I've enjoyed for over 40 years. And it's just given me meaning and purpose and a chance to give back and all these different things.
Yeah.
If you're looking for anything like that, you will not find a better career to make a difference. And I like to say to my students, who are you not to change the world?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have every right to contribute. I will mention that, you know, both of you have such extensive experience in behavioral health. One of our previous guests, Dr. Lucinda Miner, who's with the National Institute of Health, was a big contributor to the HBO documentary feature film on addiction. I would be really interested in having you folks back. Maybe we could even do a little series over a month about behavioral health and ways that we can seek better behavioral health. I really appreciate your time, and I think the listeners here really got some good information. Again, please visit our Facebook website page, and we can give you more information about this event on Saturday, April 14th. Parents, tell your kids about it. Families, talk about it. It's a great opportunity to find out more about a wonderful, honorable profession. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a healthy day, and we'll see you next time, next Friday, from 12 to 12:30. Bye-bye, everybody.